Resilience. I'm Faith Middleton, and this show is about the richness of life. Thanks for listening in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. How is it possible to survive the worst life can throw at you? How do you become resilient? Do you search for someone in the world who suffered more than you have? Or is sadness sadness? Some shake an angry fist at God. Others start out stumbling forward numbly, one foot in front of the other. And yes, some are shattered permanently. Then what is resilience, and how can it help us when life dishes up unimaginable hurts, whether you asked for them or not? What does resilience have to do with returning to normal? How do we have faith when we're blind with rage or feel broken that we can keep moving forward? Life has its joys, of course, but if we chronicle the history of trauma, big and small, it stretches, I would think, from the beginning of time and will always be with us. This is the way of life. Understanding resilience seems like a smart idea. So we've gathered some people in the studio and by phone who know something about resilience. Sherry Burton is a survivor and teacher at Sandy Hook Elementary who asked to be on the show. Stephanie Chinqua is founder and executive director of the Resilience Center of Newtown. Bruce Clements, by phone, lost his young son to suicide and as a former minister has counseled many grieving people, as has our valued longtime contributor, New Haven psychologist Dr. Nancy Horn. She specializes in resilience in many ways. Thank you to all of you for exploring resiliency with us. We're going to open the phones to hear your stories in a little while, stories of resilience. So, Stephanie Chinqua, at the Newtown Resilience Center, you see people of all ages. You use all your many resources there. I was so impressed when I went online and saw all the things that you were doing, the classes, the workshops. When you founded the center, how did you and your team, and how do you still define it, how did you define resiliency?
For me personally and from my work as a social worker for the last 10 years, resiliency is really a trait that we all have. Every individual has that trait. It's whether or not you choose to use those skills and to learn how to behave your thoughts and your actions, which are then learned and developed through relationships, caring, empathy, and support with other people.
So you feel like every person has that capacity?
Absolutely.
And Nancy Horn, how do you see it?
Well, I agree with Stephanie. I do think that people have more or less of that ability, and there's some people that really need to change some of their ways of thinking so that they actually can be more resilient. So they need a little bit of help with that, need some training with it.
That's the big question: is can we train ourselves? You know, can you build that muscle of resiliency?
Because I think so.
Yeah. Okay.
Definitely.
So what about this place in life when you hurt, when you can barely breathe or even think from hurt, which when hurts are really major, that's really usually the first response. Are any of us aware of our resiliency? Stephanie, when you first meet people who've been through some kind of trauma, do we say to ourselves, I'm resilient? Or are we even thinking about that in the beginning?
I think it depends on who you are and how much stuff you had prior to coming into the center, coming into the latest trauma in your life. But I believe that anybody who comes to the center or to any kind of therapist around, that is a huge step. And they may not recognize it, but it is showing that they have the ability to be resilient and they are looking for those caring and supportive relationships.
I'm sorry. Please.
Another way that you can see it is if you hear a traumatic event, in my view, is something that is so shocking that you can't really emotionally take it in right away. There's no way it fits in the data of your brain, really. It doesn't fit, and it doesn't fit emotionally in the world up till now. It's too much, so to speak, too much to have. And one thing that I think shows that we're resilient is that usually our first reaction is denial. We don't really even take it in. So you can watch the organism trying to take care of itself. You know, it's like it's trying to take care of itself, trying to not take in too much information because it's too hard.
So that is a sign of resiliency.
Well, it's a natural thing that happens, and I personally think it is because you get to see the mind being careful about how much it takes in.
Mm-hmm. And creative. Bruce Clements by telephone. We did a show on surviving the loss of a child about 9 months ago together. And you explained then, Bruce, that you had and Hannah had lost your young son to suicide. What is resilience to you, Bruce?
Well, it's two things. It's a gift rather than a... I mean, it feels to me as if it comes from outside rather than inside. And I may be quite wrong about that, and it may be just my particular take on it, but when I find myself still alive, when the person I love very much is no longer, I look at the fact that I'm still alive, and not just, you know, metabolizing, but also working and connecting. I take that as a gift. The other thing I'm thinking, and I wanted to ask Nancy about this, to what extent is overcoming something which has really feels as if it's broken you, what extent is it work? And if it's in any sense work, what is the work?
I think initially, well, and the other guests can come in here too, because I think initially one of the most difficult things is for people to believe that they need to talk about what happened, because if they don't think that there's a sympathetic ear, they might think somebody's bored with hearing it. They themselves think they should get over something, or they just feel a natural instinct to withdraw. That is work, because a lot of times people really have to talk about what happened, and they have to tell their own individual story, and in great detail, actually, because what they're doing is they're trying to make space again for this traumatic material. So in a calm way, and with support, they are trying to go through all the details of it so that they can get it to fit in their brain in some kind of way.
As a therapist, do you find yourself assigning that work?
Oh, you know, I don't say, oh, this is homework. I make them do it with me, really.
Yeah.
Because I've seen what happens if someone has something traumatic happen. You can have people in the whole family have a problem. I mean, I had a little girl come see me because she was suicidal in second grade. And what was important was that her mother had witnessed a very traumatic death and had never gotten to talk about the details of it. So I had the mother come in and tell me every single detail of what happened, in addition to getting the little girl's math skills improved so she didn't have to be ashamed in second grade. Mm. And she got much better.
Mm. So Sherry...
I do remember being told that. I remember reading that and being told that, and in a pretty conscious way saying, okay... that's my assignment.
Mm-hmm. Sherry Burton, you were there. You've been through a fair amount, and you've been making use of the Resiliency Center. I'm so interested to hear your thoughts on this.
Listening to Bruce, what he was saying about doing the work or talking about it, I think that's very important. I think that we became part of a club that we did not want to belong to. And so my first reaction was to kind of shelter myself and only talk to the people who I felt understood. And I think that one of the biggest supports for me early on was when Paula and Kiki, two survivors of the Columbine shooting, came to Newtown and met with some staff members.
Through the Resiliency Center.
This was something...
Something else.
Something mm-hmm. else. And their take, their insight, their compassion, it made you feel like you're not now alone in this group or this club that you don't want to belong to. And it gave hope. So when you have that hope, then I feel that you can build again on what that inner resiliency is. How I came to the Resiliency Center was I met Stephanie at an event that they were running for community members in the summer. And I am currently in my senior year, and I need a placement for a practicum. And I also was looking for some ways to heal for myself. And we traded emails back and forth, and we just connected. And that connection has really opened up a lot of healing for myself in different avenues, different seminars, different speakers, and opening myself up to hearing what they had to offer.
Sherry, does resilience feel like a muscle that you build? Does it feel like that on the inside?
I feel like it's your heart was broken. And so I feel like resiliency is part of the tool that helps your heart heal. That's the only way I could describe it is I had a very broken heart and not quite sure how to put those pieces back together. But resiliency is making that little step every day and knowing that somewhere that little step is going to maybe interact.
What is that little step that you make?
Getting out of bed.
Mm-hmm. Right. Being in the moment is important. In other words, what Sherry was saying, an important thing is to be able to be in the moment and to live in the moment, to have, if you have the strength, to have goals in the moment, to have thoughts about the future, but to be able to kind of be in the moment, not in the past, not having some kind of extreme reaction like, oh, this always happens, or I'm the kind of person this would happen to. You know, these general statements that are not really grounded in what am I going to do now and what am I going to do this morning? How do I take care of myself?
The stories the mind tells oneself, mm-hmm. you're talking about. Mm-hmm. Bruce, were you trying to say something?
Yes, I think that part of the issue here, or part of the fact of life, is that we are born to stay alive. And one of the things that's happening, or one way to understand what happens to survivors who in fact survive, and almost all of us do, is that some machinery, which has been going since the first life began, some machinery is carrying us, and saying to us in a totally unconscious way, get up. Breathe, hey heart, keep beating, it becomes a challenge to do that, but we rise to the challenge because a sudden death or a sudden loss is an attack on us. It attacks us, and once we if we realize I have been attacked. And therefore, I need to mobilize.
Bruce Clements, and we're with Sherry Burt, Newtown survivor and teacher at Sandy Hook. Stephanie Chinqua founded and directs the Resiliency Center of Newtown. Bruce Clements on the line, and New Haven psychologist Dr. Nancy Horn. All of them gathered here to talk about resiliency. We're going to continue our conversation. Would love to hear from you at 203-776-9677. We'll be right back. I'm Faith Middleton. Thank you so much for listening at 203-776-9677 here on the Faith Middleton Show. We are looking at resilience. What is it? How do you strengthen it? How do you cultivate it? How do you find it if you are convinced because of some small or large trauma that that you don't have it? So we're talking about that skill, that resource. And with me, I have Sherry Burton, who is a Newtown survivor and teacher. We have Stephanie Chinqua, who's founder and director of the Resiliency Center of Newtown. On the telephone, we have Bruce Clements, who's a longtime contributor to the show, and also in the studio with me, a very longtime contributor, New Haven psychologist Dr. Nancy Horn. Here's what we know. We know that the message has gone out from the Newtown community for the world to be sensitive, not everybody rush there, to be judicious about what you say and do. People in the community, I gather, understandably, do not want to live through a loop of what happened a year ago. And so one of the ways of indicating that is to say to people, please keep back just a bit. On the other hand, you are all saying that it's understandable that so many people have wanted to do something. And Nancy Horn, what is that about?
Well, a lot of people, another form of resiliency is to be able to take some action. A lot of times people decide they want to take some action. They want to do something to celebrate their loved one, or they want to get involved in political action or community service, or they want to become more involved in a spiritual group. And they decide on taking some kind of action, which makes sense to them. And I think that so many people were traumatized, albeit not as much as if they were there, with the event, hearing about the events, that I think many people wanted to take some kind of action and felt really impotent about what to do. And that was tough for people.
Yeah, and can be tough for the people who live in the community if those people feel overwhelmed by all of this. Sherry and Stephanie, how can you tell us about what life is in the community? What do you want us to know?
I think for me, it's very important that the world and the people in surrounding communities know that we truly appreciate and felt their love and kindness. I know personally, I felt like I was picked up and hugged by the world. That says a lot for what was going on. I think that when you started seeing slogans like, we are Newtown, we are strong, we are Sandy Hook, we choose love, I think that's a very powerful message. I think that for me personally, I think this weekend would be a great time to share an act of kindness, to take an action that would show resiliency, to show somebody else. Connection, I think, really helped me be a stronger person. Connecting to other community members, connecting with my coworkers, having that time is what built my resiliency. I do feel it's getting stronger, and I think it's a year young, and I hope someday it's, twice as strong as it is now. Our community is a beautiful place, and I think that they just want some time this week to breathe.
And I think to Sherry's point, we really appreciated a lot of really great things happened. A lot of acts of kindness were done a year ago, which is why we're trying to tell people the month of December and for the next week to do and to teach your family and do something kind and perform an act of kindness. And in the community, we're trying to do that amongst ourselves and with our family members to teach everybody to continue to be kind, because there was a lot of kindness brought to our community. At the same point, we as a community need to heal together, and we're still in the infancy of that. And so in order to do that, we need to have the ability as a community to start to come together and build those caring relationships and supportive relationships with other people in the community so we can become more resilient.
I see that at the Resiliency Center that, Bruce, I don't know if you had a chance to look at this, but I'm just looking at one day's schedule, at 9 o'clock in the morning, reflexology, Reiki, and herbal remedies. 10 in the morning, pet therapy with the dog Zoe. 12 noon, therapeutic open art studio for children and crafts for adults, chair massage, calming sounds, music therapy, stress reduction techniques, and then lots and lots of services, meetings and groups and individual counseling. So tell me about this kind of holistic approach and how that's grown.
So my belief was that we needed to be open to all the modalities are out there and all the ways that people can heal, because that is different for every single one of us. And if we could try to get a local, centralized place that was safe, more of a trauma-informed model versus a medical model, and we could provide free and confidential services, so take away that piece of insurance, financial burden, and have people come and decide and educate them of what works for them and what heals them. So we decided on the, for the anniversary that we were going to be open and to bring together a lot of wonderful volunteers and therapists in the community to give people a safe gathering place where they could just come as a place to be and do a craft or talk to somebody or get more of a service to just talk to somebody about how they're feeling and what they can maybe do to feel better.
Is it also a place where you can not talk about it?
Absolutely. We have a general area that we always have coffee, tea, internet, where people can just come and it's very comfortable and sit on a couch and do work or do nothing. You can come there and do nothing.
Bruce?
I'm not sure this is relevant, but let me throw it in anyway. Back a couple of remarks. We're talking about people, Nancy was talking about people needing to express their concern, to connect. And I wonder if it isn't true of every event, maybe even including very joyous events, that you are either at the end of them smaller or larger, but you're not the same size. You cannot stay the same size. And I felt myself going through something like this and continue to feel that you either get a sense that the world doesn't have meaning that you thought it had, or you get the sense that you have to be part of that meaning, that you have to shoulder in some way, even though you're hurting, you end up having to shoulder a larger burden. It has awakened you to your obligations. I think that happened to me. I cannot testify absolutely that it did. I think it does happen to some people. They become more empathetic, more active, more reaching out.
We're talking about resiliency. Sherry Burton.
To piggyback off of what Bruce said, for me, that was exactly, I like to explain it as my safe world was no longer safe. And so I went through this process of trying to make sense of how am I going to make my safe world safe again. And there's a certain part of me that is a ghost that's no longer there. And that's my belief that I lived in a completely safe world. I do believe that I am in a safe world, just not as safe as I thought it was. I think what Bruce said is that I've chosen personally to make this a growing experience and to try to make my resiliency muscles stronger, but I also feel passionate about bringing it to the community, to other people, to try to show them that there are doors, there are different doors for different people, might be yoga, that might be all one person needs. It might be crafts with children, but I think what Stephanie has envisioned for our community is a wonderful place. Every day that I go there and people come in, they say, this is warm, this is safe.
Mm. Mm. There are these two trauma specialists, Calhoun and Tedeschi, at the University of North Carolina, and they talk about something called post-traumatic growth even after disaster. And I thought, what is that, post-traumatic growth? And so, Stephanie, you're nodding your head. They said that things can happen to people who go through some kind of trauma that point the way toward a growth and resiliency that's unexpected. And so they said, here are things on the list as they have studied people who've been through some kind of trauma. These people will say that there's a change in how they now relate to other people. They talk about a recognition suddenly of new opportunities. They feel new priorities and they see new pathways in life. These trauma survivors say they have a greater appreciation for the value of their own lives and life in general. They recognize their own strengths, and there is some kind of spiritual or existential development. These are the things that they have noticed in many survivors that they've talked about, and they call it, because none of these survivors thought this would happen, this unexpected traumatic growth, which is interesting. Sherry, can you identify with that?
Completely.
Yeah. Oh, here's a caller. Eileen, Faith Middleton and the gang, we're talking about resilience on the show. Go ahead, Eileen.
Bruce Clements made a comment earlier that resonated with me, and I've never heard it spoken this way before, which is that when you experience a sudden death, it is an attack. And you know, I personally experienced a sudden death of my spouse, not due to violence, but I was a young mother of a child and pregnant with our second. And I think what I felt it personally as an attack and sort of the universe against me, why did this happen kind of thing. And yet I had to mobilize to support my children and find within myself resiliency that I didn't know I had. And so the comment that your guests are making really resonate, and I think they're directly on point, and that is whether it's a different thing for sure if it's a violent death at the hands of a third party, but even for a traumatic, unexpected death, these same kinds of things do pertain.
Yes. Yes. Thank you so much for adding your voice to the show. Nancy Horan.
Yeah. One of the things we haven't really talked about directly, and I kind of want to put words to it, is the importance of empathy. It's hard to believe how much empathy is healing, how important it is to really believe that somebody thinks it's legitimate for you to be upset. It's very, very important. And we have to have self-empathy in a traumatic situation. So we have to be able to say, oh, it makes perfect sense that you are upset. It makes perfect sense that you're not quite over this and can't be all jolly at Christmas dinner. And it's okay. And I think that's one of the great things that the center is doing, because it's saying this is so traumatic that we have this place here for you to come together. It makes sense that the people from Columbine would come, because it really is something. And that kind of empathy is enormously important.
Mm.
May I ask about survivor's guilt and whether that is part of the package that people suffering this way bring?
Yes, that is a question. You know, is it okay to laugh? You know, is it okay to keep on living, to confront yourself and say, I'm alive, do I get to be, and not feel guilty about all of this?
It absolutely is, and I think survivor's guilt for our community has been something that's been there, and it's still there, and trying to help people understand that it is okay to laugh. It is still okay to have Christmas coming up and go to the tree lightings and have, you know, the fun things you used to do with your kids at the holidays and the vacations. And it's getting people to understand that nobody wants them to suffer. And that guilt, though it's part of the process, it's okay to also ask for help to help through that process.
Do children experience the same kind of guilt, survivor guilt? I mean, we think about adults when we talk about survivor guilt, but do children have it too?
Yes.
Yeah, and I think it's more complicated for kids because they don't really know what's going on or what's happening with them, but yes, they do.
I think the other thing when you talk about survivor's guilt, when you find yourself laughing, there have been times when I've stopped myself, and then I think, well, that's kind of silly. And I had a conversation with a coworker the other day about when first returning to work, it was a struggle. You know, there was a lot of mixed emotions, and to put on a radio station that wasn't playing the news and to put on a radio station that was having jokes and something that created laughter in your vehicle on your way into work so that you were actually feeling uplifted from that laughter. And I think that laughter also added. There's so many dynamics that can add to someone's toolbox for them to build that resiliency muscle.
Another one is gratitude. And people sometimes are aware that they are thankful that they're alive. They may feel bad about it, but they have an awareness of their life. But someone who can cultivate gratitude in their life for all of the things that they value creates greater resiliency and strength, emotional strength.
Here's our number, 203-776-9677, 203-776-WNPR. Our show is on resilience. We have some people from Newtown in the room, and we have Bruce Clements on the line, longtime contributor and also longtime contributor psychologist Dr. Nancy Horn, looking at resilience from a lot of different angles. Mike of Faith Middleton and the group, welcome to the show.
Hi, Faith. How you doing?
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's great to be a part of this. I appreciate it.
Well, I'm glad you're on the line. Go ahead, Mike. What are you thinking?
Well, I didn't really have one thing to say. As everybody speaks, I'm thinking, oh, yeah, and there's this and there's that and everything. It's just to put myself in perspective for the audience. I was in the inner circle, but I wasn't actually a member of the club we don't want to be in. I'm actually was one of the members of the auxiliary club of the club you don't want to be in. So the spouses, the significant others of survivors, and a lot of people don't really understand the depth that this trauma like this can occur. It's obvious you're in a situation which is life threatening. Okay, well, that's understandable, but then to go one layer away from that, like, well, what do you have to complain about? You weren't there. Yeah, and there's a lot of trauma that us SOs had to deal with. And one of the pieces was the fact that we weren't there and all that led to that, or what could have been. And we also had to work through that ourselves in a different way. Hearing across the country, people, you know, there's the empathies, there's the people that want to go out and do, people that want to go out and need to confirm that it happened. But there's also the naysayers, the ones that are really frustrating that it's just it was a conspiracy. You know, there's so many elements that go on. Mm. And what I have discovered, and especially in watching Cherry, is she kind of had this natural ability. She didn't even realize she was doing it. She just needed to create. And talking to some spiritual leaders, that seems to be very common first start to create something.
You're saying to use creativity as part of building resilience. And
right.
So, Mike, I think you're making reference to Sherry, the angel pins that you and a group of people made, huh?
Yes.
Yep, that was it. I mean, it was just instinctive for her. And And we ended up going for asking for some help through craft stores, the managers, their hands down, oh, yeah, how can we help? What can we do? And it seems like wherever we were asked, people so much wanted to be a part of the healing and creating instinctively. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, here, it's the least we could do, you know. And the creation, I got a really great talk from one store manager. He was talking about his rabbi, how his rabbi was all about go make something with your hands. You know, that was their solution. And so he saw us doing that, and he could not help enough. It was incredible. And that creation, too, in terms of the inner circle, what Sherry's talking about being free to open up only to those others who have lived through it, kind of like war vet swapping stories. They don't talk about it to the family, but only to each other. Well, getting a circle of staff members and the people that have been through this, all just mindlessly making ribbons, the conversation can flow, and it was safe. And there's a tremendous amount of healing and people recounting experiences to each other at that point. That their mind was calm and they could process because they're not really having to think or worry, just doing crafty projects.
Mike, that's Nancy Horn.
Well, you brought up the effect on family members of this, and the Army, I guess, used the word resiliency. They were teaching resiliency in the Army for family members, and to deal with their family member being deployed and various aspects. They had resiliency groups, and they taught that in the Army.
That's so interesting. So, Mike, stay on the line for me for a second, because I want to ask you a question. We're going to take a quick break and then talk more about resiliency here on the show, whether your trauma is big or small, no matter what has happened or will happen, because it's an unpredictable life. Good to build that muscle. Good to understand what resiliency is. That's what we're doing on the show. We'll be right back. I'm Faith Middleton. Thank you so much to our team, senior producer Lori Mack and producer Jonathan McNichol, and especially to my guests, Sherry Burton, who's a Newtown survivor and teacher at Sandy Hook, Stephanie Chinqua, founder and director of the Resilience Center of Newtown, and we have that center's link at our website right now, WNPR.org. Click on Programs for the Faith Middleton Show. It'll take you right to that link if you're interested in finding out about more about the center or supporting the center in some way. Bruce Clements is on the phone, and we have psychologist, New Haven psychologist, Dr. Nancy Horn here in the studio. We're talking about resiliency and how important it is to move toward it in this unpredictable world of ours. When you can. Now services at the center. Mike, I'm going to get to that in just a second, but I wanted to ask you and thanks for calling in. I didn't know you were going to do that. And as Sherry's partner, do you find that you have to be careful, remember, in terms of resilience, to take care of yourself, that I bet as a partner to anyone who's going through something, you can feel like it's your job to take it on, to help lift the burden off of somebody. And then after a while, after hearing the things you hear, that you have to pause and say, hey, I've got to watch out for me too.
Oh, yeah, I'm still working on that part. Yeah. We've seen this. We've got a foreshadowing of it from Columbine where the teachers there told us, all right, you will be spending more time at school because all that matters is the kids, then you're going to be neglecting the family. And sure enough, that's what happens. And so the family then, you know, being supportive of it, you're going to have to help them work through this. And, okay, then we didn't get quite down that deep enough layer where, well, as family, we're going to be neglecting ourselves too. And that's exactly what happened. I mean, supporting her was great. It was easy. I enjoyed that part. It's the least I could do. But then supporting myself, now I kind of forgot about that.
And I guess that's what the Resiliency Center is for, right?
Exactly.
We all know, caretakers need caretakers.
Right.
And
it's really important to identify it, because I wouldn't even allow myself to accept that I would need help. It wasn't an equation. I wasn't told that. And I think a lot of people really need to be, services are offered. Here's how to bounce back and all. But it's really hard to say you need to use those services. Because everybody, it's very sort of hands off, and it's there, it's provided for you when you need it. But
yeah,
Sherry can probably attest how many teachers are not taking advantage of it because they can't accept the help.
I think Mike makes an important fact that we've had that discussion where I would say to him, "You need to worry about you and take care of you." And he'd be like, "I'm okay." And I think that happens for what you said is caretakers need caretakers. And they almost need that permission. And maybe Nancy could understand or could give some understanding to why sometimes people don't give themselves that permission to take care of themselves when they are in a caretaking role. I see it every day. I tend to be the same person. I'm a caretaker. And one of the things that has been constantly put out to me was, you need to take care of you. And so it's,
Well, one of the things that I see is that if somebody gets depressed, when we're talking very positively about trauma, like things you can do in resiliency, but there's obviously many, many reactions that are very sort of devastating. So let's say somebody gets depressed from some kind of traumatic event, and the person who's living with them feels this kind of, heavy, depressed feeling, and it goes on. It can go on and on if the first person isn't really doing stuff to kind of work on what they're dealing with. And they can feel that they cannot burden their spouse with their upset from their depression. They can't say, "Listen, I'm fading here because you're only irritated at me and you're only sort of talking about how bad life is, and it's really getting to me." Well, I encourage people to try and share that with the person, because there's different ways of being depressed. You can be depressed and say, "I'm depressed and I'm going off and doing it." Or you can be irritated at people and very sour and sort of make people around you kind of miserable. And so in some ways it's good to at least let someone know that they're having an effect on you, because then they can help you and have empathy for the spouse that they're with, and try to understand that it's both people in it in some kind of way.
And it's a gesture of respect, I think, to be able to say to the other person, what is happening to you is also happening to me, and I understand that you have the capacity to help me as well as I having the capacity to help you. When we are too careful, we unconsciously show a lack of respect for the resources of the other person.
Thank you, Bruce. Terry Faith Middleton and Associates, welcome to our show on resiliency. Go ahead, Terry.
Hi, Faith. Thanks so much for having this discussion. I think resiliency is something that's so important. And I just wanted to talk about resiliency in general with children. I'm a child care provider and have been for many years. And I was raised by two very traditional Irish American parents, and resiliency was very important to them. I always think it traces back to the potato famine and just having to be. We're like second, third generation here in America, and I think it was very important to them that we were able to just kind of pull ourselves up by the bootstraps on a daily basis. In taking care of children over these past 10 years and raising my own son by myself, I have noticed that resiliency has almost become something that is not only dwindling, but almost
removed from parenting practices, with children being of all ages, not just young children, but children who are older, that it's almost more customary and it's more praised if a child is protected to the point where the playing field is made completely even. I think we all know about these conversations. It's a topic in parenting that certainly you hear a lot about, the over-coddling and helicopter parenting. But what I worry about when I see these kids is that, you know, 10 and 11, they have difficulty even making it through sometimes their own day.
And Terry,
it seems to me that that really resiliency should be something that we should be continuously. I mean, it's okay to spare your children certain adult kind of concepts. But, you know, we're all going to encounter trauma at some point in our lives. We try to shield our children from it, of course. But I just wanted to know if any of the panelists would like to comment on how resiliency is no longer really a factor in contemporary.
Terry, thank you. Thank you for bringing up that topic. That is just a wonderful direction in talking about resiliency. Dr. Horn?
Yes. One of the things that leads to greater resilience is to believe that there are things that are unfair that happen in the world, and that there's pain that somebody's going to have in the world, that it's part of life to have things not go your way, or to have unfair things happen, or to even have terrible things happen. And I agree with the caller that our whatever is motivating our making sure our children have no pain, no discomfort, no displeasure. It doesn't give them the message that really is part of life and that it's okay. You can tolerate some frustration. You can tolerate not having the exact cookie you want and that life will be okay.
You can survive these things.
And I believe, as far as resiliency, I absolutely agree with the caller. And, you know, ideally, I think every town and community should have a resiliency community center just teaching kids and adults the skills, because no matter what life brings, it's always not going to be sunshine. And we need to start giving people those tools and skills to make the communities and individuals and children stronger to face whatever lies ahead of us.
But if you think, you know, that something bad that happens to you, it's your fault, or you must be different than other human beings because this happened to you, it's much harder to accept it.
What about that? What if you've been through some kind of trauma, and so has somebody else, and you see one or few people doing better than you're doing? What about this idea that everybody there's a formula for each person, and everybody is doing the best they can with the resources they have. How do we think about this? What's the right way to think about this?
I agree with Stephanie. I think that resiliency centers and skills that we need to teach. And the caller hit it right in the head. Our children need to be uncomfortable. There's nothing wrong with being uncomfortable. It does build resiliency.
And quickly, this idea that everybody makes progress at the rate they can.
Yes, and sometimes people's early childhood experience, there's an epigenetic effect on the way their genes get expressed. And so some people have had early trauma, which makes it more difficult.
Mm. Bruce Clements, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you,
Faye. I hope you will come back and talk more about this. Sherry Burton, thank you. Dr. Nancy Horn, New Haven psychologist, thank you. And Stephanie Cinque at the Resilience Center, thank you so much for the work that you do. You can find out what they do at our website, WNPR.org. Just search programs for the Faith Middleton Show. And please join my colleagues, John Dankosky and Colin McEnroe, as they talk about Newtown in the days ahead. I'm Faith Middleton. This show is about the richness of life. Thank you for listening in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island.